Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it, one episode at a time.
My name is Quinn, pronouns zizier, or they, them.
And my name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
This week, we're talking about season one, episode 20, the one with the evil orthodontist. Aired April 5th, 1995, written by Dottie Abrams, and directed by Peter Bonners. I don't think we've had an episode written by Dottie Abrams before.
I do not think so either. In this episode, Rachel starts seeing her ex-fiancé, Barry.
Despite the fact that he is now engaged with her ex-best friend.
The gang is getting peeped on by someone across the street with a telescope.
And Chandler shows that once again he can't properly function around women as he waits ever so impatiently for a call from his first date from the night before.
Bum, bum, bum. All right.
Hi, Emily.
Hi, Quinn. How's it going?
It's going all right. We survived the elections.
We did.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the lesser of two evils, which is what we wanted, and we were very, very excited about.
Yeah, my favorite meme that you posted this week was, thank God that Biden won so that we could go back to hating him.
Yeah, I know. I feel that. I feel that a lot. I'm really, it's like, it feels like a bittersweet kind of day, or it was a bittersweet kind of day on Saturday when we got the news, like, sweet in all the ways in which, like, you know, I was scrolling through my Instagram feed and my Facebook feed, and it was just like a bunch of people who were posting how freaking happy they were. But what was also really nice to see was that people were not just posting about how happy they were. They were also posting like, okay, great. Now that Trump's out, we've got lots of work to do. Like, it wasn't this like, all right, now we can sit back and like, you know, chill. It's like, no, we like the work here is not done. We gotta hustle, you know? So.
Yeah, totally. I definitely had the sentiment. I was like, okay, yes, I totally agree, but can we please just wait until Monday?
Mm. And then I saw like a really, really, like, I follow, like, it's called Super Dank Anarchist Memes. Nice. And it was like, it was something along the lines of like, no, they can't wait till Monday. They're not going to enjoy their Sunday brunch. We're going to piss in their Sunday brunch. I was like, okay, whoa. Like, I was like, waiting till Monday is for me, not for them.
Yeah, like, I know, right? It's like, I'm tired.
I'm tired.
I'm tired. Exactly. Do you know how many emotions I've had this week? More than I know I had.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So maybe a few updates on the podcast. We got some great feedback on how our podcast was sort of unedited last week. It wasn't fully unedited, but
they were like, about what?
But it was like by majority unedited. Mm-hmm. And that was lovely. That was nice to know that like it was appreciated content despite the fact that it wasn't like pristine or we basically kept all of our ums, essentially. I think that's the main issue with our podcast. We're going to do it again this week. And I think we want a little bit of feedback from everyone to sort of let people know what you guys think of the podcast. Because also, we're kind of starting to veer a little bit more towards, instead of going through the episode, like scene by scene, which sort of just took up a lot of time, you know, instead of picking out more like specific themes and concepts that we want to talk about the episode, mm-hmm. We're kind of leaning towards that right now. And so give us your feedback if you prefer more of like a play-by-play of what happened in the episode, or if you actually just appreciate us taking up the time instead to just explore the concepts that we feel are worth talking about. Yeah. Not that the whole episode isn't worth talking about, because like, I really do like going through it scene by scene. I would happily just have Emily, you know, say every single line and then me tell everyone what I like about that line.
That, I don't know if that would be a very entertaining podcast.
I mean, it would be very entertaining for me.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so did you want to get into the episode?
Yeah. So what are your general feels about this episode, Emily?
Okay. I guess there was like a lot of things to unpack. I want to like talk about my general feels about this episode at the same time that I talk about the three things that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because they like determined how I felt about this episode.
Yeah. Go. That sounds great.
So I want to talk about, kind of the dynamic of Rachel, Barry, and Mindy. And especially the question around like, should Rachel have been, you know, Mindy's maid of honor and like the ethics behind that and everything kind of within that relationship, because I have a lot of thoughts about it and maybe they're controversial thoughts. So we'll see. The second thing I want to talk about is Joey sexualizing lesbianism throughout the entire freaking episode.
I feel like we're just going to overlap for everything. Go ahead.
And specifically, like, I guess that made me think of my feels around this episode is that I actually felt like the writing was really good in a lot of ways in this episode. There were a lot of like silly jokes here and there. And I like, I really like this episode in a lot of ways. It's not like my favorite. It's like kind of just there. But I did feel like all those lesbian jokes were literally just filler because Joey didn't have any other plot this episode. Mm. And so like, well, like except for calling, you know, like finding the peeper there, but it just felt like an unnecessary kind of lazy writing, lazy jokes. That's my feel.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I want to talk about is, again, Chandler's inability to function around women. And also how shitty the men are
in this episode again.
Yeah. And like, isn't that what we called our last episode?
No.
Okay. Because I had originally wrote for the title and created an entire artwork for our episode last week that was called the one where all the men treat the women like shit. Or treat women like shit.
Well, it is an overarching theme. Yes. That's for sure. But that's not what we ended up calling it. Yeah, I think we have a lot of overlapping in what we kind of want to talk about. I what I put down here was like Joey being gross.
I put that so many times in my notes.
I also want to talk a little bit about Chandler, although he doesn't. Like, I wanted to bring him up, but he wasn't really, like, a focus or a center for me. I think something that's going to be really interesting to unpack this episode is the confusing or complicated dynamic with, like, Barry, Mindy, and Rachel. Mm-hmm. And it's going to – I think it's, like, one of our fun things that we like to do where we take, like, scenarios. It's all written out. It's not real. But then sort of, like, talk about how could we transform this to be better people? And, like, what can we learn from this? What are the actual, like, responsibilities in these situations? And
which is why I think we're going to have I think we're going to have contrasting views on this. So this is going to be interesting.
Possibly. I mean, mm-hmm. And then something that I also just really want to, like, talk about is just how different communication was at this time.
Mm,
like, yeah. Like, it's been 25 years. Wow. And, sorry, whoa. And, like, just, like, the whole, like, telephone situation and, yeah, and just, like, thinking how now it's just, like, it's just so different. It's so freaking different. Like, yeah. Chandler, why don't you just go like one of that people's posts on Instagram?
Double tap those photos. totally. Okay, yeah. I kind of want to talk about that too, so that's great. But I want to talk right away into the cold open. Can I start with the cold open?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah? Okay. So right away, the first conversation they're having is the Mr. Peanut versus Mr. Salty. I forget fully what the whole conversation's around.
Who would you rather be, Mr. Salty or Mr. Peanut?
Okay. And then Ross chimes in and says, I don't know, I would rather be Corn Nuts because they're crazy, is what he says.
Right. Well, it was because Joey was like, I'd rather be Mr. Salty because he's the toughest of them, which again, toxic masculinity all over the place.
And then
that's where it's like, you know, Ross is like, because he's crazy. Also, right. Just to put in here. Crazy is not the best word to use in general, but we can get into that another episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so fun facts about Mr. Peanut. this year, tragically, the world lost... How do I do, like,
tear?
the world lost Mr. Peanut in a tragic roadside accident. Mr. Peanut and his friends were driving down the highway, and there was something in the middle of the road as they took a sharp turn. And unfortunately, the...
Peanut Mobile,
was that word?
Which looks a lot like the van I want to live in a year from now, guys.
Interesting. Got thrown off the road, and Mr. Peanut and two of his friends landed holding on to a branch on the side of a cliff.
Much like any Bugs Bunny episode.
And in order to protect his two friends, Mr. Peanut sacrificed his life, letting go of his cane and tumbling to his death into an explosive fire below.
Roasted peanut butter.
R.I. Peanut.
So Emily's not joking, by the way, right now. Like, this is an actual commercial that just came up out. Apparently, it's like a setup for the Super Bowl that's coming up in a little bit.
Yeah.
And there is a hashtag that what's the company name? The company who owns Mr. Peanut or whatever is actually pushing for, like,
Planters.
Planters is pushing for people to mourn Mr. Peanut by using the hashtag RIPeanut.
Yeah, so you can go use the hashtag RIPeanut and say some nice words for Mr. Peanut. But also, he was like a billionaire with a monocle who used to sell peanuts to other peanuts despite being a peanut himself. Well, he used to sell peanuts to people.
It's
capitalism.
Yeah.
At its finest.
I mean, like, I was like, maybe there is some, like, internal workers that are like, burn the rich. And Emily was like, no.
I don't have that much faith in a massive corporation. But now they've introduced Peanut Jr. Also, despite rumors that were circulating in 2010 claiming that Mr. Peanut was in fact gay.
Which Phoebe mentions at the end of the show.
Those rumors were quelled by the CEO of Planters, saying that Mr. Peanut and his friend, I think his name is Benson, are just friends and live in separate residences. So sorry, all of you Mr. Peanut is gay fans out there. He's not.
Right.
But also, maybe he just has a homophobic CEO and he doesn't feel comfortable telling him these things. All right, I think we should move on.
Maybe he's faked his death so that he could
go live with Mr. Benson.
Yeah. Or whatever. And they could go live their happy gay life out of the public eye.
That's great. Okay. So also what's happening in this cold open is that there is a creep with a telescope creeping in on the house. And Chandler has the not at all so pleasant line that says, "I feel violated and not in a good way." And it's a gross line.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that.
It's a gross line because being violated in itself implies...
not a good way.
Not a good way. So, yeah. Okay, so let's move on. There is...
Let's talk about Chandler because he's the one that's talking about in like that second scene in the cafe, how it was like he went on the best date.
The greatest first date of all time. Yeah.
What it's like school children will be taught in school or something, whatever. Anyway, he's so dramatic. I love it.
And then he says, we didn't play any games. And then he doesn't want to call her because he doesn't want to seem needy.
Yeah. Like, it was definitely written out to have exactly, like, to just...
get that reaction.
Yeah. Like, to point out...
How ridiculous it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's like rewatching this episode, I just really appreciate how they're setting up Chandler right now. Because, again, we've talked about this, I think, like more times than maybe people want to hear in this. But I really, really, really love Chandler's growth in this show. Mm-hmm. And And, you know, they're like, they're really setting it up. Like right now he's like, you know, he's dating. He's clearly not that serious about anyone. He's willing to like play games. He like, it's just, it's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's horrible because like literally this whole episode, you just want to like hit him. And as in the words of Monica, where it's like, I can't believe my parents are actually pressuring me to find one of you. Yeah,
that's a great line.
Yeah, and all the other guys, all two of them, but they're all in agreeance to every aspect. So when Chandler's saying that, I don't want to, you know, seem too needy, like both Ross and Joey are like, yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes total sense. I think Joey says, let her hang a little, let her dangle a little or something like that. Which is just like,
yeah.
What a waste of time.
Such a waste of time. It's also like, I also feel like that was way more part of the dating game than it is now in a lot of ways. Like, not that it was like, okay, but I just feel as though because there was literally only one way to contact someone, like, was it different?
Right. Whereas like now it's so normalized to like,
you go on a date with someone, you go on
Instagram. Internet stalked them already. Well, not stalk, but like you've surveyed their in all of their social media platforms.
Yeah.
Already. You already know all the connections that you have with them.
And after the date, you've probably liked a post of theirs or a photo of theirs. And I'm sure there's like some form of dating rule where like you don't like someone's photo right after to going on a date with them or like it's going to be too quote unquote needy or whatever. And I understand like, I would like to replace the term needy with like coming on too strong. Cause I do think that there is something to say about coming on too strong.
Yeah, totally.
And so I don't know if like, if they're referring to being like to Chandler coming on too strong, if he calls her, that's a little ridiculous because they had the date the night before. If anything, like that's the best time to call someone is to be like we had a great date last night, like, you know, like, and I think personally that the ball is in as much her court as it is in his.
Yeah, I think though, like, again, I think dating etiquette has changed, and I think that from every other aspect that I've watched in this show. Because, I mean, when the show was aired, I was too young to be dating. I was 5 years old when this episode was released, guys. So I think that it was much more common for it to be, like, in, like, the quote-unquote man's court for, like, after a date. Like, it's very, it's, like, referred to in the rest of the season, sort of, like, this thing where it's, like, I'll call you is kind of the thing that, like, the guy will say. It's, like, kind of in the guy's court, you know, because no matter what a woman does, it'll be too needy if she's the one asking for anything, you know?
Worse.
And then, But I do think it's, like, I think that there is still very much, like, a game, quote-unquote game that people play these days. But I think it's just evolved in a lot of different ways. Like, communication is so much more fluid now, right?
Yeah.
It'd be so much more common for, like, you know, after a date to, you know, send someone a post that was, relevant to a conversation that you guys had during the date. Or, you know, like, to follow up with, like, oh, yeah, this is the show that I was talking about. Or, you know, like, anything along those lines, you know, Snapchat each other, because that's a thing. You know, like, it's...
Are people still using Snapchat?
I mean, yes. People use it as, like, a whole social media marketing platform. I don't know how it's used in that sense. Wow. But it is a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel as though it's just been so long since I've dated that I don't, like, have the same kind of memories around. But, like, all of my, like, back and forth kind of dating things was, like, not, like, the ones that I'm thinking of were, like, not with men in the sense of, like, the times in which, like, I was really panicking about, like, should I send a message? Should I not send a message? I guess there's, like, one. But, like, really, like, I feel as though – like, that idea of, like, the ball being in their court. Like, I feel like it's been so long since I felt that way while dating someone. Like I was, like, I don't know, like, 19 the last time I felt that way about dating someone. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, like, with a dude, the ball being in the court of the dude.
Right. Yeah.
Because yeah. It's just like, but there is definitely a feeling like around like, am I coming on too strong? Like, am I coming off as like someone who's like desperate, as Chandler says, you know? And I do understand that feeling of like, I don't know how this person, like how frequently this person likes to communicate. Like, for example, if you don't know how, if like someone is like a frequent texter nowadays, like is someone's the kind of person to like look at their phone all the time and constantly send you messages, or are they the type of person who goes on Facebook once a week and like never responds to their Facebook messages, you know? Like, so then the communication's going to feel very different. So if like they've sent you like, you know, one message and you sent them three, you're like, oh my God, am I coming on too strong? So it's like, I don't know. I guess I do understand a little bit about this quote unquote game, because I do feel like there is a certain amount of like when you're getting to know someone and you don't know what they constitute as like a regular amount of communication, like what they expect out of a date, et cetera, et cetera. And like you're not at the place there where you've like opened the lines of communication to be able to talk about these different things. I feel like there is a certain amount of like game playing until you get there, but it just shouldn't be considered a game. It should be like, you know, a kind of like a preliminary dating. Oh my God. You can tell I've been working in the admin section. I was just like imagining like a pipeline of like, this person nailed the first interview. Let's send them over to the second interview. This person nailed the first date. Oh my God. If you want me to create a dating pipeline for you, please let me know. I will do it.
I feel like there is room more and more in the world for matchmakers, because I just feel like people are so much more willing to like use external services to date now. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like matchmakers are literally just brokers. You know, like you can like hire a consultant for so many different things who can like, who are sometimes brokers that like connect you with these different things, like, you know, that other freelancers that they think are most effective for what you need. And I'm just like, that's what a matchmaker is. You know, true. It's literally just this freelancer who's like a consultant for you that's going to help match you up with some certain other, you know, consultants or freelancers that will help fulfill a need, and then you can choose which one is best for you. Anyway, I just want there to be some more queer matchmakers out there, guys, because dating sucks.
Especially during COVID.
Yeah.
Okay, so then Phoebe calls Chandler testosterone-y.
Which is great.
Which I think is really
But
great.
Also, hormones have very little, if nothing, to do with anything of anyone's character.
Yes. True. But it's just a great word.
Yeah, no, it's great because it sounds like macaroni.
Yeah, exactly. Testosterone.
Macaroni.
Okay.
Testosterone and cheese.
So then Rachel comes into the cafe. Like, we're not talking scene by scene, but we are setting up kind of the whole episode here. So Rachel comes into the cafe and she's just spent kind of the afternoon with Barry. He's apparently been sending her flowers, sending her gifts. And they've clearly, I guess, started seeing each other, you could say. Mm-hmm.
Let's start unpacking that.
Yeah, let's do that. I think that. Yeah, you go.
Well, okay. So the storyline kind of goes – let's summarize the storyline here, okay? So in the end of the last episode, Barry barges in right as Ross was about to be like, I like you. I think we should go out. And he's like, I actually love you still. And then it sort of picks up here where Rachel has gone out to see him, and you kind of piece together that – Barry has been sort of relentlessly calling Rachel and sending her flowers, and the point of her meeting up with him was to tell him to stop. Mm-hmm. Which, in my experience with men, giving them attention will not make them stop being annoying. But anyway.
I think it's I do have to feel like it's a little different. Like it is an ex-fiance. You're going to spend your life with this person. I feel as though there's like a different kind of relationship than like that like weird guy you dated for like 2 months who's relentlessly messaging you, you know?
Yeah, no. That's fair.
But I do agree that, like, he clearly knows that if he pesters her enough, that she'll take the time, you know?
Yeah.
And at the same time, I do also sympathize because she's like, and she says it, she was like, it was familiar. And I think that's totally a really important line because you're seeing that, like, and it's such a real line, I think, that feeling of like getting back together with someone because they're familiar.
Yeah.
I think you asked one of the that question on the polls.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten back together with like an actual partner, but I've definitely like gotten back together with like someone who I was seeing or sleeping with, you know, like mm-hmm. more of like that kind of partner.
So 67% of people who answered our polls said yes to have you ever gotten back together with someone because they were familiar.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really real thing, you know, like when someone's familiar, it doesn't mean nothing. You know, it's not just familiarity. It means that you have a foundation of a relationship together. And let's be real, like the worst part of a relationship is like the beginning part. I mean, it could be
some people would argue otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think people like both kind of thing for different reasons. And I think that
there's a vulnerability that comes with first starting to date someone.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And having already reached that stage and knowing how you tolerate each other and how you like can work around each other and like kind of have, and not just like some unexpected things come up. It's like you know each other, you know, like what causes this and what does that. And, you know.
Yeah, totally. Agreed. Yeah. And I do think that like, okay, so then Chandler, Ross comes in and he kind of shoves Chandler in this like, tell her that this is a bad idea. Like, support me as a friend.
I have my reasons.
But then Monica comes through, and I know we are going to do this at the end of the episode, but I'm going to go ahead right now and nominate Monica for being the best friend.
Right, you guys. Episode. So from starting last week, Emily came up with the idea that we're going to have a segment at the end of the episode of who's the best friend of the episode.
So I'm putting in – this is example one because there's more than one example in this episode. And this is example one of Monica coming through with being the best friend. And okay, I want to bring up something. So this past weekend, for those who don't know, which is all of you, I took a weekend course, basically a trauma-sensitive training. And one of the things that they said, and it really stuck with me, was this idea of offering support that is both grounded in reality and compassion. And the speaker of this course said that reality without compassion can sound really mean and rude, but compassion without reality is or could be enabling. And so all that to say that I feel like Monica in this role, she like comes through, and when Rachel asks, is, you know, it was, we had fun, it was nice, is there anything wrong with that? Monica comes through and she's like, okay, yeah, there is some things wrong with that. Like, you know, she gives her kind of like this tough love moment. And I think that Rachel kind of needed that. Rachel kind of needed someone to be like, look, like do whatever you want, but also like, you know, he's dating your ex-best friend, or he's engaged to your ex-best friend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So moving forward, they basically end up having sex. Rachel and Barry have sex, and then we get into this whole other...
In a dentist chair, which, probably better...
It's an orthodontist chair?
Oh, whatever. which is, like, probably better than the car, but I think it probably took a lot to figure out how, like, they were going to shoot that scene and have them both somehow fit on that chair.
That was weird.
And to, like, be able to sit there and look naturally at ease as opposed to, like, okay, if I, you know, hold on to you this way, I'm not going to fall.
Yeah, it feels like anyway. A very impractical place to have sex.
Anyways,
whatever.
Anywho.
But, so let's – do you want to talk a little bit more about this? Like –
Well, okay, let's do you want to talk about that scene specifically or pan over to like when she comes home to
Yeah, we could do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So she gets home and everyone finds out. She seems very dazed when she gets in, and I think it's really funny that there's, like, floss in her hair.
Yeah, she's trying to pretend that, like, nothing happened, that she told them off, that, like...
I don't think she was trying to particularly pretend anything. I think she just, like, was sort of out of it and didn't particularly feel like answering people's questions.
That's fair, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Monica notices, is perceptive, as she usually is, and kind of points something out, and then it comes out and everyone knows. And I want to talk about Ross's reaction in this scene. Mm-hmm. Because I think that, like, initially it's really easy to look at Ross, and we've talked so many times before about how controlling Ross is of Rachel and how that's, like, a pattern and an issue. Like, he hasn't even... I mean, whether or not you've told her that you like her, being controlling of her is not okay. But also, he hasn't even told her that he likes her. And he's getting upset at her repetitively.
Mm-hmm. For making these, like, quote-unquote wrong choices about her life.
And, you know, like, that are, you know, have nothing to do with him.
From and the are really just, like, shaming her in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. But I also find this conversation that they have particularly interesting, because Ross has just gotten out of a marriage that ended with, not only because his partner, is a lesbian and is now with a woman, but also because she cheated on him, right? And I think that this is, like, something to consider in this conversation here, where Ross is getting extremely upset and agitated and has to leave. I do think that part of it has to do with his, like, upsetness about Rachel now sort of seeming to be dating Barry. But I think also part of it is, like, she brings up, like, isn't this the same as Carol? And, like, wouldn't you, sleep with Carol if she was like, I want you right here, right now? And, you know, he's like, that's different. And I kind of agree that it's different. And, like, I'm not going to say that it's, like, totally fine for him to just sleep with Carol whenever he wants, because she, you know, Susan was, like, the other woman, and, like, you know, but I think that it's, like, all the more upsetting to, like, bring that up, a relationship that ended because, you know, his wife cheated on him, and, like, it is different, you know, like, he had his wife cheat on him, and, you know, now Rachel is being that person where she and this guy who's engaged is now, like, he's with Rachel cheating on the person he's engaged with.
Right.
He can see himself in Mindy, you know?
I understand where you're coming from, but I feel like the writers didn't consider that.
Yeah, probably not, but that's the whole point of the show.
Right.
We talk with them like they're real humans.
That's true.
They are not real humans.
I think that, like, I really think that he is just being obnoxious. Like, I wrote in my notes, I was like, I prefer when Ross is sad and needy than controlling and needy. Because, like, you know what? Be sad that Rachel doesn't want to date you despite the fact that you literally never told her that you want to date her. Like, be obnoxious, be annoying, but, like, don't let that come through in a way in which you're telling her how to navigate her life. You know, like, if you're uncomfortable telling her how you feel, that's totally fine, you know, but don't expect her to, like, mold her life around you when you clearly have not expressed that you like her in any way.
Right. I also, though, think that it's valid, like, in a group of people when, you know, a friend in common, you know, it comes out that they were a part of someone cheating on their partner. I think that it's, like, natural that you're going to have a variety of responses, and some people are going to be upset about it, and some people are going to be fine with it. And I think that's just, like, the reality. I mean, cheating, whether in poly communities or not, because cheating can happen in poly communities, it's, like, it can be a very upsetting thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I think that it's not obvious. And if we're going to talk a little bit more about this whole Mindy and you know, talking a little bit further into, you know, Mindy calls Rachel and she wants to talk to Rachel and she wants to have a meeting. I do want to bring up something that we didn't say from the last scene, which is that when Rachel is leaving the orthodontist office.
Oh, yeah, that kid is there.
Well, the kid is there. I wasn't actually going to talk about that. But
it's the same kid from the second episode of the season when she goes and gives back the ring. Just FYI.
I believe it. When you are seen an orthodontist, you have to go pretty frequently to get your wires tightened.
Yes. Emily and I both had braces.
Yeah. But okay, so Barry says to Rachel, he says, "I'll just break it off with her," referring to Mindy. And he says it so offhandedly, and he just says, "I'll just break it off with her." In this, like, really kind of, like, totally, like,
there's ridiculous so many layers to that, and it's so fucked up on every single one.
Okay, and so then basically Mindy finds out that Rachel's been sleeping with Barry. And then Rachel finds out that Mindy was sleeping with Barry right before they were supposed to get married. And then they have this, like, bonding moment where they're both, like, apologizing to each other and hugging, when really the person who should be apologizing is Barry. But, like, obviously they should also apologize to each other. But, like, it then kind of works out to be this thing where they end up confronting Barry and, you know, saying that they're both going to break up with him. And he, like, has this moment where he's like, "Everything that I did it because I loved you." And then he, like, hesitates and he's like, "Mindy." Like, he, like, well, it's like he flipped a coin in
Rachel
his head.
Rachel has to be like, "Which one are you talking to?"
Yeah, who,
like,
are you talking to there, Bear?
Yeah. And, you know, I definitely think that in that moment, he's literally just choosing whoever he thinks he has the best bet with, to be completely honest.
Which is really, really fucked up, because to begin with, he says, like, "I'll just break it off with Mindy."
Yeah.
Like, he just, like, he clearly doesn't actually give a shit about either one of these women. And, like, from my guess, it's like he feels like he has to get married. He has to, like, kind of go through that route, and it's not really something that he wants to do, but, like, you know, he's gonna do it.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, this is not a huge spoiler alert, but, like, later down in seasons to come, we actually find out that Barry was also cheating on Rachel with one of her sisters. I think it was Amy.
Oh shit.
Down the line. Yeah. And, like, while they were engaged or while they were in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And so it's like Barry is, like, you know, a serial cheater, and you know, it's
he clearly has some commitment issues.
Yeah, and women are just sort of, like, disposable to him. Mm-hmm. For him to just sort of offhandedly kind of be like, "Oh, I'll just dispose of this person that I'm in a relationship with," like, no conversation, no, like, with no real concern about, like, no sign of, like, compassion or empathy or at all.
Yeah, and I do feel like, because you asked in our polls, and I was actually really surprised by the answers. You asked in the polls, you were like, "Would you still be Mindy's maid of honor after all of this?" Mm-hmm. And most people said no, and I was actually quite shocked. Do you have the numbers there for that one?
Yeah, 11% said that they would be Mindy's maid of honor after all this. 89% said no.
Yeah. What did you answer?
I didn't answer. I don't always answer the polls because I do them. I mean,
what is your answer?
What is my answer? I would, I mean, okay. So I don't think we've done it. Okay. I don't want to give an answer without, like, talking about some other things too, though, in it. Okay. Because the thing is that, like, even Mindy in the first place asking Rachel to be her maid of honor, like, we also didn't talk about the fact that, like, why is Rachel even saying yes to this?
Right.
For other reasons outside of what just happened here in this episode, you know? Right. Like, 7 months ago, because it's actually said in this episode, 7 months ago was the last time that she talked to Mindy, which is when she walked out on Barry. And then when she went to give Barry back the ring, she found out that Mindy went on the honeymoon with Barry, like, her honeymoon that she was supposed to go on with her fiance, or her then was supposed to be husband, and then they kicked it off, and he got hair plugs for Mindy, you know, and then they still don't talk except for when Rachel insults her on the phone. And then fast forward 7 months and Mindy's now asking her to be the maid of honor and like has not reconciled in the situation, like what had happened 7 months ago. Mm-hmm. Didn't, you know, like Mindy just started dating Barry, you know, she's Rachel's best friend and didn't, and Rachel had to find out through Barry, you know, like that's just like really shitty friend stuff all around.
That's true. Yeah.
And so it just makes it like all very strange, this episode to begin with, you mm-hmm. know, like why is Mindy talking to Barry? And then it's sort of,
but we don't know that Mindy and Rachel haven't communicated at all. Do we?
Yeah. In the episode, she says, I haven't spoken to Mindy in 7 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's odd.
That whole situation playing out is a pretty big wedge in a friendship, especially if, like, the reconciliation was a few words and then they don't speak for 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like...
Yeah, I'm not justifying it. I'm just trying to figure it out because I do feel as though, from my perspective, Rachel has, like, pretty much just, like, fully not into Barry. Like, and the only reason why she was dating him is because, seeing him again and sleeping with him was because, again, it was familiar. But I don't actually think that she has any romantic interest, any, like, harbored feelings around Barry, which is why I think she says yes to being Mindy's maid of honor. I think, and I also think she says yes because she panics. She panics because she thinks that Mindy's there to confront her about cheating on her, right. Or cheating on with him or whatever. And so when she's not asking that question, her like first response is just yes, yes. It's also like it would be weird if she said no. Like how do you say no to someone asking to be their maid of honor? It's more weird for Mindy to ask than for Rachel to say no.
Emily, I think that might be more a reflection of your unhealthy need to say yes to people.
No, but like honestly, if someone feels as though you are like an integral part of their life to the point where like they want you to be their maid of honor and you didn't realize that they had considered you to be this integral part of your life, like you're going to say no. You're going to be like, no, I actually don't feel like we're that close. Like that's fucking mean.
Like, I mean, I think in that situation, it probably would have been better if Rachel said no because she's sleeping with Mindy's fiance.
Yeah, for sure, which is where the panic part comes through, the panic part. But, like, right. At the end of the episode, she agrees to still be Mindy's maid of honor. And I think that the reason why she still agrees is because she literally realizes that she has zero feelings for Barry. She absolutely doesn't give a shit about Barry. And, like, she just wants to, like, be there for Mindy and, like, do what she needs to do and then move on.
Yeah. I don't have any issues. To be honest, I feel like when Rachel initially agrees to be the maid of honor, I'm like, this is weird. That shouldn't be a yes. That should be a, I think we've grown too far apart and I don't think this makes sense. Also, you're marrying the guy that I left at the altar that you started dating literally on the same day as my wedding. You know, like.
And then finding out that, like, you were sleeping with him beforehand.
Yeah, those are all very valid reasons to be like, nah. Mm-hmm.
But I think that shows that Rachel is like completely over it.
But I don't. Okay, I think that she could still not want to be with Barry, but also have doubts. And I think it's interesting because at the end of the episode, she does say that she's like, she's mm-hmm. found closure in the situation. She always felt like she doubted mm-hmm. herself and she realizes that she actually, you know, dodged a bullet in the situation. And I think that makes sense because all of her family was all angry at her and all of her rich society was like, how could you do something like that? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that if anything, though, for me, and I also think it's weird that Mindy even asked her. Yeah. But then I think that also, like, by the end of the episode, I think it actually makes more sense for Rachel to be Mindy's maid of honor. Because, like, through that experience, they, like, rebonded, really re-reconciled. Rachel could really, like, discern her feelings for the situation. Mindy validated her in the situation.
Yeah.
And then Mindy is going to go through with it, but based on her own personal judgments of the situation and what she was prioritizing, what she actually wants. Mm-hmm. You know,
which I think that when I first watched this episode, like years ago, I think I was definitely along the lines of like, he cheated on you. How could you ever, you know, do this? And I think I've always had, like, for the longest time, I was always, like, in my head, I was like, cheating is the absolute no-go. If anyone ever cheats on me, we're done. Never say bye. Like, all, like, you know, pack a bag, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I think there's so much complexity to adultery, like, that, like, or adultery if it's a marriage, whatever, cheating if it's not a marriage, but, like, adultery. Fancy. Wow. But, I genuinely think that, like, there are worse things you could do in a relationship than cheat on a partner.
Yeah, totally.
Like, way worse. And, like, clearly, Mindy feels as though this is not, like, that far out of her boundaries. She's not super, like, she's decided to accept it, and she's, like, moving on, and she wants to marry him.
Yeah, you know? What I find really interesting in this situation is that Mindy's not like, I'm still probably going to marry him because I love him so much, or mm-hmm. because I think he's still a great guy. I think he really means it.
Yeah.
It's for her own
title.
It's for her own reasons. Like, she has her own, like, him being faithful to her is clearly not a priority for her in the relationship. Yeah. And what she actually wants out of the relationship is, you know, some people, you know, in some ways it could be, like, shallow, security. I guess. But it's, like, but
it could also be security, yes, financial security.
Financial, like, security. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, like, I mean, they're living in a super monogamous sort of, you know, rich society. It's like, maybe she's like, I don't care if he sleeps with other people. Like, that's not a concern to me. Like, he can go get his boots
jollies.
His jollies anywhere he wants. You know, like, that's not what I look for in a relationship. And
I don't think she feels that, like, nonchalant about it, because she clearly approached Rachel and was, like, crying and was upset about it. But I do think it's, like, she's just, like, she just is, like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
I want to move on, you know?
And though, you know, I think that Barry is a douchebag, but, like, trying to, because of his lying and, you know, like, cheating isn't okay if you're going to sleep with other people, have conversations with your partners, and don't be a fucking coward. But, like, I think that, like, to write a happy ending for Mindy, because I still like Mindy.
And I love Mindy.
But, you know, like, you know, it would be so cool if, like, how moving forward, they just had, like, an open relationship and they both got what they wanted. And, you know, Barry could be more honest and upfront about him, you know, sleeping with other people. And Mindy could get all the security and the benefits and the companionship that she's looking for in other ways. And, you know, maybe getting her jollies elsewhere too, you know?
Oh my God. I just created a whole story in my mind.
Fanfic.
And I do think that I had a few feelings, and I wrote some notes about this. I would feel very differently about Rachel still supporting this relationship moving forward and this wedding moving forward if it was something other than cheating. If, like, he had been physically abusive, I feel as though the approach would have to be very, very different, which, like, is obvious. But, like, I mean in the sense of, like, I don't think that this is, like, kind of a deal breaker. And, like, you know, because I remember first watching this episode and being like, why isn't Rachel convincing her that she's making a stupid decision, blah, blah, blah. Like, she should be being a better friend. But, like, I think in this case, being a good friend is just like, all right, if you feel like this is the best choice. And I think that, again, it comes through a little bit with that reality plus compassion. Mm-hmm. She's like, throwing everything on the table. She's told her friend that, like, all these things are there, but she's also like, look, I'll still support you and like, be there if that's what you need. And she even says a line like, I hope Barry doesn't kill you and eat you in Aruba. So she's, again, like, she's very much declaring that she, like, isn't sure about this relationship. She doesn't know how she feels about it, but she's going to support her anyways, which is, like, I think maybe Rachel should be awarded the best friend award. But she kind of, like, goes down after, like, you know, sleeping with her ex-best friend's fiance. But
Yeah, and I think that that's sort of, like, what you can do with your friends is sort of, like, be honest but still love them and show up for them. I actually want to read some of the responses that we got from, you know, some of our Instagram polls here. Specifically, I asked, what would you do / say if you found out your friend slept with their ex who is now engaged? Which... Mm-hmm. I thought was a very interesting question. And I think that a lot of other people did too, because I actually got probably more responses than I normally do on these sort of like open questions.
Mm-hmm.
I love how one of them, to open up with like the most compassionate one, is, you know, are you okay?
Right.
Which I think is like such an interesting thing, because like, yeah, like that's like a great way to start a conversation with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is just be reminded that we are all capable of shittiness. Mm-hmm. Tell them that it was a really bad thing to do. You answered one here, that, but you already talked about it, so just skip over that.
I don't even remember what I said.
And you said, oof, I'd have a hard time holding my tongue. Maybe a combo of compassion and reality.
Yeah.
And then another one is, I would tell them that's not cool and distance myself from them.
Hmm. A range of reactions.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, like, people are going to react differently, because cheating is a traumatic thing that can happen in your life. And mm-hmm. your personal response to finding out that your friends are cheating is going to come from a place of like, A, you have to be a support for your friend, but also primarily you have to be a partner to yourself. And you also have to like be able to make sure that you are able to show up to actually be
genuine,
the right type of yeah. support for that person. And so like, you know, distancing, although I think that asking someone compassionately, like, are you okay, is one thing. But then other people, it might be kind of like a, like, the, I'm not cool with that. And mm-hmm. having to distance yourself, because that's something that resonates really strongly with you, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you let the other friends that you, that person has, kind of be the ones to step up and help them navigate through the situation, and be the ones to ask the questions like, are you okay?
Totally. Okay. Speaking of friendships and dating, let's talk about
Why Chandler. Did you look at me that way?
No, I was like trying to, I was trying to find a segue. I was like, how do I segue to talking about Chandler? Okay. We're going to talk about Chandler. That's my segue.
Okay.
So I think we kind of talked a lot about Chandler already. Like him waiting for the ring, damn it, ring. But what we did talk about is the end of that. So he spends literally the entire episode kind of pining, you know, with all of these like issues happening with his phone. His phone turns off, and then he like leaves a voicemail, and then pretends that like he's at a restaurant while leaving a voicemail to show that like, you know, he has friends and he hasn't been sitting there all day honing, you know, and it took him like 2 hours to write this thing, like, which is like all really cute, you know. It's like all like, and I really wish that they had built this up and like not let us down, you know, right. like him just like being real, but like, I guess there was no other way unless they wanted to keep this character for like another episode. But like, it just felt like he clearly like had such a great time. He told them all about it. Like he was like really getting excited to send this person a voicemail. He was like, why hasn't she called? And he's like feeling all these like anxiety feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cute. Like in a lot of ways, it was cute. He was stoked. He was like, you know, he wanted her to contact him, and then he tried calling her, and then she never called back. So clearly she's not interested. She's ghosting him. Ghosting in the 90s. And so like, and then in the end, we just kind of get let down.
Yeah. I feel Chandler, especially in this part of the seasons, he's really just this beautiful little relatable outlet of anxiety, you know, like you, even though he's like such a shit, especially at the end of this episode, which is unfortunate that it wraps up this way. But like the entire episode, you're like right there with him. You know, like, even though, like, we didn't date in a time where this was, like, the communication rules and, like, regulations or unofficial regulations of dating, you know, like, we have other means of communication and always have in all the times that we've been old enough to date, because 5 years old is not old enough to date. But it's just that like you're right there with him the entire time. You're like, I get this. Even though I had a cell phone by the time I was dating, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, there is like that anxiety of the dating anxiety. It's real. It's real. We talked about it a little bit, but it's like, it's hard to, it's hard to figure out what is like shitty games that are being played and what is like just being excited and not really knowing how this person feels about you and like not feeling like you're ready to share how you're feeling about them because you don't know yet. There's no answers yet. And so like this kind of like playful, what's going on kind of thing, you know? So,
yeah.
So in the end, she shows up and she was like,
she seems great.
She seems great. I think it's a little weird she showed up.
Really?
I do. It depends on how far she lives.
Right.
If she lived like across town, it would be very weird if she showed up.
Right.
If she lived like a couple blocks down, then like I was on a walk and I just decided to pop into a place where I knew you probably would be. You know?
It's funny because I think if it was a dude, we'd say the opposite. We would be like, oh, that's such like a considerate thing to do. And like, you know, look at him being wearing his heart on his sleeve and just like showing up. You know, like it's kind of romantic.
I don't know. I don't feel like she wore her heart on her sleeve though. It didn't feel like romantic. Like it felt like she was like, yeah, I got your number wrong and like I wanted to make sure you were okay. Like it was just kind of like it didn't feel like romantic. It felt like kind of like business like.
Hmm. I don't get that impression.
Like showing up to a cafe that you know this person that you went on a date with once sometimes hangs out with his friends.
Sometimes.
Okay, yeah, but she doesn't know how often he's there. On like on the off chance that he might be there, like that's kind of intense. Like if she was a couple blocks away, then no, it's not intense. If she's a couple blocks away, then I think it's very cute. If she's like across town. Or if she's like
passing by.
If she's like in New Jersey, coming to Manhattan, like that's weird.
Okay. Yeah. But you're making like these intense assumptions that she's clingy.
No, I would feel the same way if a guy was lived in the West Island. And then, like, came to see me at a bar downtown Montreal that I sometimes go to. And, like, just to like, at the off chance that I could potentially be there.
Right.
It's weird.
I mean, the missing piece is that you were trying to get a hold of him all day.
I would still not be happy for him to show up. Like, it's like, it's just weird. Like, you've been on one date. Like, if it was like a couple of months of dating, sure. But if it was one date, like, you know, you dress differently on your first date. You like get yourself ready in a specific way. You haven't shared everything with them. And then they're just going to show up and like catch you off guard in this like location that is like your space with your friends. And then it's honestly what it is. It's my social anxiety. It freaks the shit out of me.
You're like, I need you to be very, like...
You have to give me 3 days warning, but also you have to love me incessantly.
Yeah, okay, I think that's what it is.
I just have major anxiety about...
Really glad you're married.
I'm saying I'd be alone if I wasn't married.
No, I would just be your friend being like, if this was a real thing that happened to you, and you're like, this is not cool, I'd be like, oh my God.
I really used to be hyper, like, dissecting every single text message I used to get, for sure. But it wasn't, like, but it definitely didn't feel...
Were you Chandler about it?
I was very Chandler about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, let's take just a couple of minutes, not a lot of minutes, a couple of minutes, to talk about the peeper.
Oh, right. I totally forgot that we had that to talk about still.
You thought we were done the episode?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I totally thought we were done the episode. Okay, so.
We also didn't talk about Joey and lesbianism. That's why I was trying to move us along.
Yeah, we debated a lot of things randomly. You guys, this is why we edit our podcast.
This is exactly why we edit our podcast.
Okay, so.
So, okay. I want to talk, let's just say like 30-second rant, okay, about Joey and lesbianism. So, one. Lesbianism is not a thing that exists for straight men. Two, lesbians are consistently over-sexualized in media and to the point in which, like, they are, like, that media representation ends up being, like, harassment in public locations. So if you are like more of a femme lesbian, you tend to be sexualized by men at bars and your relationship is not taken seriously because you're really just there to please the men who are there.
Again, it's like the concept of the male gaze. Everything that women do is for men, essentially.
And if you're a less femme or more kind of butch lesbian, you usually have the opposite. Men tend to kind of treat you as an other in a lot of ways. You're not one of the guys, but you're also not a girl. Therefore, you are not like within the scope of having a regular human interaction. So like Joey sexualizing like Rachel, who is not even a lesbian, for like kissing her her friend in camp. First of all, he then goes on to ask, were you guys wearing uniforms?
Which yeah, he's like trying to get information.
Really gross.
Yeah, he's trying to get like information to be able to picture it, to put it in like, what is it called? Like the spank bank or whatever.
What is this? I've never heard of this.
You've never heard of the spank bank?
I feel like I'm very naive. And every episode we learn more and more about how naive Emily is.
Yeah, I'm learning more and more about how naive Emily is every episode too.
Whatever.
The
Am I like that married lady now?
You are definitely that married lady. And
I used to be so much more gay.
I mean, just because you're gay doesn't mean anyway. But the spank bank is sort of like a little virtual memory bank of experiences or images that one pulls up when masturbating.
Oh, thank you for that. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate this description. Okay, yeah, totally. So it's gross what he does. He basically sexualizes Rachel as a teenager because she's in camp.
Right. Yeah, I guess you're right.
There's like a fine line because he's like – he doesn't know – he didn't like
– yeah.
You know, whatever. She's an adult now. But anyways, all that to say that it's gross what he does the entire episode, where every single time Rachel is hugging another woman, he sexualizes her. And he also sexualizes Carol all the time. So it's not like he's just like being silly around his straight friends. He's also making his like the lesbians in his life uncomfortable. So yeah. Not cool.
I also want to point out that 40% of people who answered in our polls said that, yes, they do have a guy in their group of friends who sexualizes anything that the women or femme folks do.
That's disgusting. That's a large quantity.
That is a very large quantity. But, like, just to, like, I wasn't surprised when I saw that. I mean, like a little in a sense, because I just don't want that to be a thing. But it's just like we're actually dealing with a real issue, right? Like the male gaze is real. Men who think it's okay, it's real. It's just
right.
Anyway.
I think I answered no, but that's just because like I have like four friends right now.
Emily is taking applications for friends in Montreal, guys.
If you want to be my friend, send me a message. Okay, thanks. But also, I'm very busy. Very, very busy and very tired. Okay. And then the peeper. Let's talk about the peeper. I know we're kind of brushing through these last few things, but it kind of goes along the same lines of like, I don't know, like sexualizing people and things like that. And I do have weird – I did have like this feeling in my head where I was like, I definitely feel better about the fact – that, like, the person looking into everyone's apartment is a woman with a telescope versus a man with a telescope. And, like, they're both gross and creepy. They really are.
Yeah.
But there is something to say about the way in which, you know, men commit more violent crimes than women. And therefore, there is a certain amount of, like, anxiety and fear about, like, someone watching your daily movements that is different. But, again, both are not okay.
Yeah, totally. I think it's entertaining because of the spin of the situation where, like – and also the irony, right? Because, like, there's the irony that, like, they – and that they demonstrate in this episode where they're continuously watching – the neighbor across that, you know, ugly naked guy, as they mm-hmm. call him. And, you know, on the one hand, and then in the same, you know, breath, they're criticizing this person. But this person also has binoculars. I do think that there is a yeah. difference between someone choosing to keep their blinds open when they knowingly know that people can look in and see them.
And they're naked.
Yeah, and they're naked. Like
you come, there's like, you're fine with people seeing you at that point.
To yeah. a certain you know, extent. It's like, yeah. invest in some blinds or throw a t-shirt over your window or, mm-hmm. you know, expect that people are kind of going to see you.
Yeah. If they like pull up a chair and start snacking on popcorn and staring at you, then yeah, that's a different a little story. Creepy. But like if they're like walking by there, you know, and they're standing on their balcony eating a hot dog and they notice you there, then like, yeah.
Yeah. Binoculars, different story. But
did they think say telescope?
Telescope, whatever.
Feels like weird to have a telescope is next level.
Yeah, that is next level. It's like, I want to read your credit card. but yeah, I think that it's an interesting little riff off of like the typical, it just makes it entertaining because it's like a woman, but then also she turns around and she's like giving them like emotionally compliments. Supportive, like yeah. affirming compliments on their life.
It's a good twist. It's a good writing twist.
Yeah. Like and it. Suddenly they're like, well, you know, like would I appreciate just having like, you know, it's like technically a third party non-biased someone just like there being like, no, what you wore was really great. No, you're fantastic. Like I saw the way you made those cookies and that was very impressive. Like like I kind of wish I had that in my life.
I do not. The idea of someone watching me at all times is like
but like you didn't fully know, you know? Anyway.
That sounds even creepier.
Okay, I don't actually want that, guys. I'm just saying. But if it could be guaranteed, non-threatening, loving, anyway, whatever.
And I don't actually knew that the person was there.
But anyway, I thought it was funny because I jokingly put up the question, could you be okay with a neighbor who spies but gives really affirming feedback about your life? And 18% of people said yes.
Nice. I like it. I like
it's
it.
It's cute.
Clearly you guys have been in the pandemic for a long time.
Any friends?
Anyone validating my life choices right now is really needed.
Any human contact.
life.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we covered everything. Was there anything
okay, Emily, else who then? Was the best friend?
I'm still going to say Monica. Because also, I forgot to mention that Monica also gives Chandler some really great tough love advice, too. When he's kind of like pining and he's like, you know, waiting for her to call, blah, blah, blah. Monica's just like, just call her, pick up the phone and call her, just do it. And like, she gives him this kind of, again, reality check. So I think Monica was the best friend of this episode.
Yeah, I feel like I can't really disagree with you on that. She's just like kind of a voice of reason and compassion at the same time. I do think that like in its own way, kind of like what came up in the episode that Rachel could maybe be argued as being one of the best friends because like despite a really hard situation, I mean like sleeping with Barry when he's engaged, not the greatest, but she also can like pull through this difficult situation, band together with an old friend that she had like turbulent, find that like sort of like bonding and, you know, hold space for each other, stand up for her and still support her through like the hard situation and respect the decisions that she's making. Like, I think that that's also pretty great.
Right.
But along that same thread, do you know who won best dressed for this episode?
Monica.
Monica won the best dress.
I'm picturing it in my mind. It was the best outfit.
Yeah, the white button-up t-shirt tied up in the high-rise Levi's washed-out jeans. Yeah. And what's funny is that Rachel came in not too far behind with her really interesting like button-up white blousey thing with that interesting skirt that's tied up.
I really didn't like that outfit.
Oh, really? I really loved that skirt.
That material for her shirt made me nauseous. I really thought it, like, I liked the skirt, but the shirt was like, blah, blah, blah.
Anyway, I'm just saying that I just think it's interesting because it's like it parallels who we think is best friend in the episode.
Interesting.
And so maybe moving forward, we should see if, like, you know, best dress lines up with best friends, you know?
Wow. Because that's a very real correlation.
I don't know. Maybe that's what the creators intended to do.
Mm. Okay. Thanks for tuning in this week.
Hope y'all are holding up all right out there.
Mm-hmm. You can find me, my name is Emily, at emilybyoga.com or on my Instagram or Facebook at emilybyoga. That's Emily with an I-E, not a Y.
And you can find me, Quinn. Oh my God, where can you find me? Online at quinnkbrunet.com or quinnkbrunet as a handle on Instagram. You can find our podcast as WT Phalange Podcast on Instagram and on Patreon, which, by the way, big update. We changed around our Patreon structure. And so now we just have one beautiful, lovely community.
One tier. And you get everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just FYI, you can go onto our Patreon now and basically, like, sign up for any amount that you feel is feasible for you to pledge every month. And you have access to, like, a backlog of, like, fun stuff, like uncut versions of our episodes, a bonus episode that we never aired, you know, that sort of stuff. And then after 3 months of pledging, we will send you a sticker in the mail.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Great. So thanks so much for supporting us, guys. As always, you can head over to iTunes also to give us a review. That would be super appreciated. But thank you so much.
It's Apple Podcasts. Just FYI.
iTunes? I always say iTunes. Apple Podcasts. My bad. Keep
deconstructing and diversifying the media you consume. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at wtphalangepod, or follow us on Instagram at wtphalangepodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an I-E.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.